The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
China will not demolish the labor camps in Xinjiang. China will not reinstate civil liberties in Hong Kong. China will not stop upgrading PLA fighting capabilities. And why would you throw your valued partner Russia under the bus, which the West will just pocket and then continue pressurizing China because it's China? Even if Russia has turned to China for some supplies for the needs of this war, it would take months to deliver, months to adapt. And if Russia was asking for combat drones, it means months of training for operators.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was a senior fellow at Carnegie Moscow Center on China and Russia relations. I thought we should talk about this because as we're watching Russia roll into Ukraine, there's another player that we should be looking at and I think we should be discussing as well, and that's China's role. We live in very difficult times. This is a very critical moment, I think, for the world. And again, just to put this on your radar, okay, tomorrow at 11 Central, that's noon Eastern time, okay, it is 9 Pacific time. I'm inviting you to join Father Rocky and me as we give you live coverage of what will be a historic moment, I believe, for both the church and the world, as Pope Francis will be in Rome, his papal envoy will be in Fatima, Portugal, site of those famed apparitions, and he will consecrate Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. He'll consecrate the world. We need to pray for China, too. I know our crosshairs right now are looking at the situation in Russia and Ukraine, but we really need to remember China as well. China's foreign minister on Monday, he called Russia his country's most important strategic partner. That's what they said. And Beijing continues to refuse to condemn the invasion of Ukraine. As you know, the president is meeting with world leaders in Belgium right now, and China could have a profound impact on this war. You know, it could totally, if there were sanctions, if it was more vocal, it could continue, it could really short-circuit Vladimir Putin's efforts. But they've been silent, despite pressure from the U.S., despite pressure from the European Union. And they've been asking him, hey, rein in Moscow. One of the Chinese spokespersons I had seen a couple days ago say, hey, look, Russia's one of our most crucial bilateral relationships in the world, right? And I guess the enemy of the enemy is my friend, right? So they look at the U.S. and they see us, they see NATO as their enemy, you know, and therefore Russia's the friend. A lot of attention has been paid to the meeting between Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin back in February. It was February 4th when they had issued a joint statement affirming their strong mutual support for the protection of their interests. And Vladimir Putin, you know, revealed to Xi Jinping what he was intending to do. I think China's a little taken back, though, by the gravity of what we're now seeing. Russia said it endorses China's view of self-governing. Taiwan is an inalienable part of China, and it opposes, you know, independence of Taiwan. And, of course, China backed Russia in opposing the further enlargement of NATO. So, you know, Russia's invasion of Ukraine is drawn comparison to China's own threat to invade Taiwan. So let's talk about this today. Let's talk about what's happening in China. Let's take a look at these dictators, these totalitarian type of regimes. Let's take a look at what happens to the freedom of their people. I mean, in Russia, the state media there has threatened journalists with 15 years in jail if you don't deliver the message they want. There's no free speech there. People who are protesting are arrested and thrown in jail. You see what happens in China as well. In China, just to get to another point, and we'll talk to the Prime Minister, Salih Hudaïar, who's going to be joining me in a moment here. China's one of the biggest abusers of human rights anywhere on the planet. Right? Anyway, they've got concentration camps set up right now. So I think China's a big player in this. A lot of focus is just on Russia, but I think we also have to look at China and how it's all going to play out. Before I go to the Prime Minister in exile, Prime Minister Salihudayo, who's been with me many times in the past, I just want to remind you of what China's doing to the Uyghur population. This is a people, because of their ethnicity, have been arrested, have been put into slave labor camps. They have been terribly abused. And I got to be careful about how much I reveal because I don't want to say too much if there are little ears around. But China's pursued a strategy of forcibly sterilizing these Uyghur women so they wouldn't be able to procreate. The women of childbearing age have been forcibly sterilized. They jail Uyghur men of childbearing age so they can't get together to procreate. They carry out family planning sterilization. They lower fertility levels. They have put people, as I said, in these concentration camps, and there is systematic rape going on. The BBC had reported that, you know, men in suits and masks, they come to cells, they select women that they want, they take them down a corridor to a black room where there's no surveillance cameras, and, you know, the rest is, you know, it's something I don't want to share on the air. They're forced to work in the fields. There's just tremendous abuses. And I want to welcome today somebody who's been a champion of civil rights, of these abuses, who's trying to defend and bring the world attention to it, and who's here to give us a perspective on the China-Russia relation. And that is a longtime friend of the SLO, the Prime Minister for the East Turkestan Government in Exile, Salihudayo. Prime Minister, it's good to have you with me today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
As always, I'm grateful for your time. I'm grateful for, you know, raising attention to what's happening here. Before we talk about Uyghurs, let's talk about China. Let's talk about Russia. I'd love your take on this. How do you see this relationship, and how critical is Russia in all that now is about to unfold?
Well, I mean, the fact that we all know that Russia launched its invasion of Ukraine following, you know, his meeting with Xi Jinping at the start of the Beijing 2022 Genocide Games, or the Beijing Olympics. Mm-hmm. And from what we know, I mean, it was Xi Jinping telling, you know, Putin, wait until the Olympics is over, then you can, you know, launch your invasion. And at that meeting, you know, China stated that the relationship that it had with Russia was, you know, something that could not be broken, something that, you know, has never reached that level. And Russia, you know, quite frankly, I think, it, you know, Xi Jinping probably promised that, you know, oh, we got your back, go invade, you know, Ukraine. And this, you know, benefits China by, you know, taking away Western attention from China, and you know, leveraging its position to you know pretend to act like it's promoting peace and it wants to mediate and so forth.
Yeah, China and Russia have increasingly aligned their foreign policies against the Western order, and their militaries have carried out exercises together. They've flown joint air patrols. Their relationships have taken, I think, on the trappings of a moral, of an informal alliance. I guess the question is, how long can China permit Russia to do what it's doing? And if they do provide any sort of aid, there will be heavy sanctions, and there will be retaliation from NATO, the EU, from the United States as well. Are they willing to do that, or you think this is a learning experience for them? Are they thinking, wow, I'm going to think twice about Taiwan, and this is not going the way we thought it would? Because I'm sure they thought that Russia was going to roll in. 48 hours later, there'd be a new government in place, and the media would be onto another story. Your thoughts?
I think, you know, China is watching quietly. Fortunately, you know, I mean, fortunately, it didn't go the way that, you know, Putin wanted. So this in itself, you know, forced China to kind of at least pretend that it's not involved, or that it's, you know, wanting peace. But at the same time, I don't think that China will relinquish its goals of attacking Taiwan. I think, the Chinese leadership, they're about to have one of their top-level, conferences later this summer. And Xi, he's trying to solidify his power further. Mm-hmm. So he's going to have to wait before, that meeting, that conference is over before he can move any, forward in terms of Taiwan. But, this experience or the tragic invasion of Ukraine has shown China that it's not going to be easy and that the international community is not just going to sit by and let any aggressor just walk in and take over another country.
Yeah. Hey, the other thing, too, which has fallen off of the world's radar, and I understand why, because of the war crimes are now being perpetrated and the destruction of a sovereign nation. China is one of the largest human rights abusers in the world. This might be new to some people. Some people may understand China's relationship with China, China's relationship with Russia. They may understand that, hey, there are factories and they understand how they play on the world scale, but maybe you could unpack or share with those who are listening a little bit about China's human rights abuses, particularly with the Uyghurs and the genocide that has taken place in that country as well.
Absolutely. For example, right now, the reason China is supporting or seems to be supporting or at least not opposing Russia's invasion of Ukraine, it has two other reasons. So, the first is the fact that back in 1949, the then Soviet Union actually helped China invade and occupy other sovereign countries like East Turkestan and Tibet. So that's one primary reason. The second reason is that, again, on the issue of Taiwan, China wants to ensure that when it pushes to, invade Taiwan, that at least the Russians won't object to it. What China is doing, in East Turkestan, in Tibet, in, Hong Kong and other places is very similar, to a certain degree to what Russia is doing in Ukraine. In some aspects, much worse in the case of East Turkestan, where, according to the U.S. Department of Defense, over 3 million Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and other Turkic peoples have been thrown into so-called re-education concentration camps, where they are being forced to denounce their ethnic identity, their religious identity, embrace Chinese, communist ideology. They are being subject to medical experimentation, torture, rape, organ harvesting, and even being, executed.
Wow, that's amazing. Organ harvesting as well? They're taking these people and taking their vital organs? That's unbelievable.
Yes, not only are they taking their vital organs, there seems to be a market now for quote halal organs. Organs of Muslims who have not engaged in anything that the Islamic religion prohibits, and selling these to the wealthy buyers from the Middle East and other parts of the global Muslim community.
Yeah, so the marketplace for that is the wealthy who need an organ transplant. Is that the marketplace that they're selling these things to?
Absolutely.
Wow, it's macabre. It's disgusting. It's unbelievable what's going on. I know there have been a number of countries that declare what's going on with the Uyghurs as genocide. I think three different countries have been involved in that. But again, this is kind of falling off the radar. I understand the world's right now teetering on the brink of perhaps a global conflict, a global war. And it's not just the Uyghurs. The Chinese government has gone after intellectuals as well, haven't they?
Yes. The centers, anyone that they feel is a threat to, their power, whether it's Uyghurs, Muslims, Christians, Buddhists, it doesn't matter to them. Yeah. Anyone that, they feel does not respect the CCP is a threat to them.
Yeah. Here's the problem with this issue, and we may have discussed this even in the past. I think a lot of Americans, they feel helpless to do anything about this because it's one, out of sight, out of mind. It's China. It's the other side of the world. yet America is hooked on Chinese goods. You know, we buy everything. You look at anything in the room here. If I pick up a remote or a mouse pad or, you know, a TV monitor, whatever, there is made in China. You know, it is made in China. How much of what we consume here in America, here in the U.S., is actually made by slave labor? Do you have any? Maybe you can't speak to that, but I'm just curious how much of the materials, whether it's our sneakers or the clothing on our backs or the bedding we sleep on or the computer monitors that we watch, how much of this is made by slave labor?
I mean, we can't say for sure. You know, I can't say for sure this percentage is made mm-hmm. in China, made with slave labor. But we know, for example, cotton. 80% of the cotton products, you know, that are made in China are made with the slave labor produced cotton from East Turkestan, which is 20% of, you know, 22% of the global supply. Wow. So you can safely assume that majority of, you know, the T-shirts, pants, or any textiles that you buy that are made in China that are cotton are presumably made with, you know, the slave labor, cotton made from the slave labor of Uyghurs. In addition, you know, a lot of companies, you know, from Apple, Nike, Amazon, and many others have been, you know, deemed complicit in the slave or forced labor of Uyghurs.
Yeah, that's very, very true. My guest today is Prime Minister Salih Hudaor. If you want to join us, the number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, and feel free to join the conversation. Prime Minister, let me take a call for you from Sacramento, California. We'll start there. Lillian is online. Lillian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question. Is it possible that China and Russia are looking at the West with dismay because they're seeing that it's challenging their way of thinking because the West is trying to go into a one-world order? They talk about democracy, but they're trying to unite the whole West, and that's displeasing to them.
All right. Thank you, Lillian. I'll let the Prime Minister respond. Any clue to that, Prime Minister?
Yes, I think there might be some partiality to that, but I would say most of it has to do with, you know, national interests, you know, big state, realistic, you know, real politics in which the Chinese government, it wants to expand its influence. It wants to expand politically and economically. And, you know, as Xi Jinping stated in 2013, by, you know, 2035, you know, China, you know, the world will speak Chinese, in which many people think that he's just speaking figuratively, but he's speaking more from like a literal perspective, because some of the policies that he pushed forward, you know, enacting national mm-hmm. rejuvenation, chasing the Chinese dream through the obtaining the Chinese dream through the Belt and Road Initiative, and ensuring that China becomes the sole power, dominant military and economic and political power in the world, shows that this is not just about, you know, pushing back against, you know, per se democracy or the Western order, but it's neo-imperialism in the 21st century.
Yeah. Lillian, thank you for your call. We'll sneak Stan in. He's listening in Nevada for you. Stan, good afternoon. You're on the air with Prime Minister Hudaor.
Thank you, Drew. Prime Minister, the question I have is with what Peter Navarro wrote in his book, Crouching Tiger, that China has been building up their military power and the intelligence doesn't know how much nuclear power they have because the government gives the military an open check because they want to maintain a police state. And now you have, with what's going on here, is it possible with the United States committing atrocities, in my opinion, that are much as bad as the Uyghurs with our abortion laws, our emangulation of our people to transvestites, all of these gruesome things. And Russia might be, you know, with Russia, them spreading their errors, but they basically reform their laws. Is it possible that China could be manipulating all of these things to pull us all into their orbit and to dominate the whole world.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole objective of China, this is not something new. In fact, this was laid down in 1922 back by the former Chinese leader at the time before it went communist, thinking about in a book titled The International Development of China. But it has increasingly become more evident with Xi Jinping's, achieving national rejuvenation and obtaining the Chinese dream initiative that he put forth starting in 2013. And right now, even with the conflict in Ukraine, the biggest benefactor right here, the biggest beneficiary of this conflict is China, because at one point, what it's doing is it's pushing the West closer to China, to where they're like, oh, we're going to have to need China if we're going to try to stop, Russia's invasion of Ukraine. At the second point, it's trying to, it's pushing even Russia closer to China, saying, oh, we have to, be buddy-buddy with China. If not, we won't be able to push back against the West. And already you see, for example, like the Biden administration, they made numerous efforts, even providing, intelligence, trying to persuade the Chinese to convince the Russians to, one, not launch the invasion, and two, not to, continue it. And so far, it hasn't been any fruitful. In fact, it's only elevated China's status of, quote, importance.
Well, hey, Stan, thank you for your call. And Prime Minister, I've got to leave it right there, but I do have a... I do want to put a plug in for your efforts. If people want to follow you, or if they want to get behind some of the outreach that you're involved in, what's the best way to do that?
The best way to do this is to, follow us on social media at etexilegov, or to visit us on our website, east-turkestan.net.
East-turkestan.net. That's Prime Minister Salih Hudayar. He heads up the East Turkestan government in exile. And say a prayer for him and his good efforts. We'll talk again. This is a story that is not going to go away and continues to evolve. And once again, I'm grateful for all that you're doing, and I'm glad to help in any way I can. So thanks for being here, Prime Minister.
Thank you for having me.
All right. I need to take a short pause. When I come back in a moment or two, I'll bring you up to speed on the latest regarding what's going to happen here on the network tomorrow. Plus, we've got new news for you regarding COVID numbers. An amazing story. We'll break that down for you on the other side of this short break. So feel free to join us. 888-914-9149. Our conversation continues right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, so grateful for your prayers with us over this novena of peace. Tomorrow, we invite you to pray with Pope Francis as he consecrates Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, reminding us that even in the most troubled moments of our history, Our Lady is there to guide us and will intercede and will protect. I personally believe it will be a historic moment. I believe it will be a grace-filled event, and I believe that good is going to come from it. And, wouldn't it be awesome to say I was part of that event? You can be part of that event, and I invite you to do so. If you can, go and pray. Beyond all else, get to a church, spend some time with the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament, spend some time in prayer, pray your rosary, pray your chaplet, offer prayer to the Lord on that day, and join the Vicar of Christ, the Holy Father, for that consecration prayer. Of course, Father Rocky and I will be live on the air 11 a.m. Central to 1 Central Time to pray in union with all the bishops and all the faithful from the Vatican and Fatima, and we encourage you to do the same thing. If for some reason you can't spend that time in prayer, you're welcome to join us here on Relevant Radio. Father Rocky and I will anchor the event, and We look forward to spending that part of our day with you. Hey, coming up, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya is going to be stopping by. I always enjoy tapping into his expertise and his insight, and we'll allow you to join us too. We're going to give you the latest on COVID-19. As you probably have heard and you're aware of, there could be the BA2 Omicron variant out there that some experts are saying can lead to another surge in cases. This is a hybrid COVID variant that's been detected. And what are scientists saying about it? You know, what is Deltacron? And is it a cause for concern? Where's it been detected? And how bad can it get? Here to explore that and also to take a look at the latest in terms of COVID deaths and numbers, what has been reported. There's been major adjustments regarding those. That's all coming up, too. You can get in on that. It's a delight to have with me today Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. He's highly sought after. He's been on all sorts of major media outlets and, of course, teaches at the Center for Primary Care and Outcomes Research at Stanford University School of Medicine, and he's an specialist in infectious disease. It's good to have him back. Doctor, thank you for making time for us. It's always good to talk with you.
Oh, my pleasure to be back, Drew.
This Deltacron, let's hit that, and then I'd love to also take get your take on the CDC and its so-called coding error, reducing, you know, the amount of deaths that that were claimed by COVID-19. But first, Deltacron, what do you know about it? Where are we seeing it, and how contagious is it?
So it's a rare variant. I think was detected first in January or December of last year, January of this year, December of last year. I don't know that we know a ton about like how infectious we don't know a ton about how deadly it is. It's likely to be about as deadly as the other COVID variants. It's also not likely to evade immunity. So if you've had COVID before and recovered, it's likely to not, you'll still be protected against it. If you've had the vaccine, you're likely protected against severe disease from it. So I don't think it's something to deeply worry about. It's something that scientists keep track of, but I don't think that it should panic anyone in the public. As best I can tell from the data, it has not exploded exponentially. It hasn't taken over. What we're still seeing is Omicron. And Omicron is about 70% less lethal than the Delta variant was. So, I mean, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
So just so I understand the science behind this, the way you get this particular type of variant, right, the Delta variant, the Omicron variant, you have these two different strains of a virus that invade, I'm assuming, a cell, infect the cell at the same time. And as that virus invades the cell, it replicates and... my understanding is it swaps parts of their genome and it picks up mutations from each other, and that's how you get this new variant?
Yeah, that can happen, but it's rare. This kind of recombination event that we're talking about, I mean, the recombination can happen all the time, but like to produce a viable virus is relatively rare. And it's this. The question isn't so much whether these recombination events can happen, which they can, or that the variants can happen, which they obviously do. The question is, how infectious are they and how deadly are they, and do they evade immunity? And the answer so far from this is that it's not particularly infectious compared to – it doesn't outcompete Omicron. That I don't know how deadly it is because there have been so few cases of it, really. And then, but as far as, like, does it evade natural immunity, from COVID recovery or from the vaccine, the answer is no.
Okay. So we're we're in the endemic phase of this pandemic right now, right? I'm assuming people should not be that worried about it. Where do you see us right now in terms of COVID-19? I mean, the weather's warming. People are getting ready to get out and put this in the rearview mirror. We've been talking about COVID for 2 years. We've been in a pandemic for 2 years. We've learned a lot. Where are we right now, and where do you see us heading in the months ahead?
Well, I think COVID, the virus, is here to stay. It's not ever going to go away. It's, I think, joined the other four human coronaviruses in common circulation. There are others, but like the four common ones. The key thing is that there are going to be future waves. There are going to be future variants. That's true with the other coronaviruses as well. But the difference between now and before is that the population is very broadly immunized against it, either by dint of having had COVID and recovered, or by having had the vaccine and thus protected against severe disease. I think it's not that you don't have to ever worry about it. It's the same sense that we worry about other respiratory viruses. It's still for those who are older, it can still be a thing that can actually hurt them. But to uproot our society in order to avoid the spread of it, which we've done for the last 2 years, well, it didn't work over the last 2 years, and it will accomplish not very much good and instead cause a lot of harm without actually protecting against the disease. I think it's time to stop panicking over this disease. It's time we should take it seriously, continue to do research on it, look for better treatments, better vaccines, and all that. But tell the public, in all honesty, the panic doesn't help. Especially if you're not in a vulnerable group, or if you've had COVID and recovered, or you've had the vaccine, it's time to start living your normal life again.
Yeah, we're still wearing masks on airplanes. It's kind of a drag. My guest today, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, if you want to join us, the number here, 888-914-9149. I'll open the phones, take a few of your questions or comments for him. It's a good time to get in. 888-914-9149. Some of the headlines, some of the COVID headlines indicate that on April 1st, we're just very close to that next week, a lot of these indoor mega events are going to say, hey, you don't need to show proof of vaccination. A lot of restrictions are going away. When do you think they're all going to be away? And why are people holding on to them so long?
It depends. Like, some places have had it away for a very long time. I mean, you think the UK lifted most of its restrictions in July 2021, in September 2020, Florida lifted many of the restrictions. Yeah. Whereas in other places like California, they still are in place. I think a lot of it has to do more with politics and with panic and fear with the media, rather than the epidemiology of the disease per se. So they could return. The restrictions could return in some of these places where they've had them. People still believe somehow that children are super spreaders. That's one of the things I'm most afraid of. Is when the next wave happens, and there'll be another wave, will schools close again? I hope not, but that's I believe, a real danger, to the kids in the schools, because the schools are a safer place for kids to be than anywhere else. It harms them to keep them out. So I think the question now is no longer truly an epidemiological one. It's truly now a political question. Is this something that we can live with without panicking, or is this something that we have to uproot our society around every single time there's a wave? And there's going to be waves every season for the rest of eternity.
Boy, that's a drag. My guest today, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. We'll take your calls in a quick second. Before I do, I got to ask you about the CDC. Big story regarding COVID. They overreported COVID-19 deaths by more than 70,000. I think the number I saw was 72,000 and some change. And this change impacted, I think, like 26 states, and it was all age groups. And the CDC, they came out and they said, we overcounted. There was a coding logic error that created this. And I'd love your take on this. How overreported, in your opinion, was COVID deaths? Massachusetts, New York, a lot of these different states are adjusting their numbers as a result of this. What do you make of this particular story? And will we ever really know what was attributed to COVID when COVID did not have a role in it, versus, how many deaths from COVID actually took place?
So this story is about, it's a little bit complicated. It's not so bad. So the CDC has two different systems that it reports COVID deaths. One is the National Center for Health Statistics system, which I think is much more accurate. And it's reporting its reporting has some lag, because the death certificates come in. It takes some time for the death certificates to come in and to get counted and put in the system. The other system is this COVID tracker that the CDC had. And I don't really know the databases that it's based on. But I will say, coding errors are common when you're not carefully auditing. The problem here is that you have a coding error that resulted in overreporting of cases that resulted in policy changes. So, like, a lot of people were panicked about how many child deaths were reported in the COVID tracker, even though the National Center for Health Statistics numbers reported many fewer COVID deaths among children. These kinds of panics have real consequences. So I would call on the CDC to be more careful in checking for these coding errors before releasing numbers officially.
I don't want to step on you because I want to hear what you have to say. I just sit back here and I'm thinking, okay, so coding error, and then, yeah, CDC needs to be more careful. I just wonder, doctor, and I like your assessment of this because maybe you don't feel the same way. It seems curious. You know, I remember watching the news when we were in the heart of the pandemic, and every night the headline is, I could have told you what the first few lines of the anchor was going to be. A grim new milestone today, and they'd lead with how many deaths were out there. I saw a piece by Cheryl Atkinson. And she went to places like, I think it was somewhere in Nevada, some other places, and, you know, there was like one or two deaths in the town. They attributed it to COVID, but she says, I don't understand why it's a COVID death. This was a suicide. It was a suicide. It was a murder-suicide. There were two deaths. You know, and the attribution to some of these things, somebody comes to the hospital for a heart attack, they get put down for a COVID death. Was there an agenda there to skew the numbers so that they could impose their mask mandates and push for the vaccine? And do you think there was more to this picture than meets the eye? I mean, because some of that data is just bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, Drew, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think what happened was that the normal procedures for counting, for assessing what is the cause of death, you know, it's a complicated question, Drew, right? So if you have somebody who dies of pneumonia, well, what caused the pneumonia? Maybe that patient had congestive heart failure. And why did the patient have congestive heart failure? Because they had a heart attack. Why did they have a heart attack? Because they had diabetes. So what caused the heart attack? What caused the death? Was it the diabetes? Was it the heart attack? Was it the congestive heart failure? Was it pneumonia?
Exactly.
It's a clinical judgment every time. And normally, physicians who oversee the death look at make that clinical judgment. Here, what happened was that we basically wanted to capture every COVID-related death, COVID-associated death, even if COVID wasn't necessarily the primary cause. There have been studies of places like Santa Clara County, Alameda County, California, where they did a sample of COVID, of death certificates with COVID on it, and found that in at least one in four of the cases, 25% of the cases, it was only incidental. COVID wasn't the primary cause of death, just like you said in that Nevada case with the
murder-suicide.
Don't really know how many COVID deaths there are. It is certainly overcounted. But I do think that epidemiologists use the large numbers in order to have people take the virus seriously. Now, I do think that the virus needs to be taken seriously, but I don't think you do it by overturning normal procedures for how you count deaths just to make the number look big. That's irresponsible, and it undermines trust in public health.
Well, let me do this, doctor. I'm up against the clock. I'll take a short pause. When we come back, we'll grab some calls. There's some good questions here. Are hospitals incentivized to put down COVID deaths? Well, Rosa, you're on deck. I'll take all your calls. If you're on hold, I'll do my very best to get you on. Plus, Anthony Fauci has compared the Great Barrington Declaration to the authors of that. And, doctor, you're one of those authors, to AIDS deniers. We'll talk about that and more. Stay with me. Our conversation continues right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Thanks for joining me. It's good to be here with you today. Just a few minutes left. If you're on hold, I'll grab your telephone calls. We're speaking today with Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, and it's always good to have you. We're just talking about the CDC and removing tens of thousands of deaths accidentally attributed to COVID. And Dr. Rosa is waiting. I think she had a good question about hospitals and these numbers. Rosa, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I mean, we all know that doctors and hospitals and even private people were incentivized to make it a COVID case, no matter what it was. People have gone in the air and put their names down, saying that their relative was in a car accident. Somehow, it became a COVID case when he died. cancer, heart attack, children, okay? They were insured by a lot of money. If a person right now today puts on the death certificate that they have, that they died of COVID, they get $9,000. Okay. And the government has put aside that kind of money for them.
It's a good point, Rosa. Let me hold you on that point right there, and I'll let the doctor respond. Incentivization, if you will, being incentivized. Have hospitals been incentivized to do that just for the money or individuals?
During 2020, Congress passed this CARES Act that gave a 20% boost for Medicare patients. Medicare patients tend to be elderly or disabled patients in the U.S., and they got paid 20% extra for treating COVID patients. They also got paid a pretty big sum of money per COVID patient, something on the order of $50,000 per patient. And so they absolutely have very strong incentives to identify every single patient with COVID. I think part of the idea was that, like, okay, hospitals are empty because people are scared to come and there's shutdown orders. So in order to keep the hospitals going, they were going to reward hospitals that were treating COVID patients. But the incentive effects mattered, and absolutely that there was no question they got paid to identify COVID.
That's a bad business plan, to say the least. All right, let's go to the phones. We'll take Greg, who's in Henderson, Nevada, who wants to join the conversation. Hi, Greg, you're on the air with Dr. Bhattacharya.
Thank you. I'm wondering if the vaccine for COVID will someday become part of the annual flu vaccine that we now take. I'll listen for your comments off the air.
Important question.
Thank you for that question. It's too early to say one way or the other. It appears to me from the data that I've seen that both COVID recovery, like you've had COVID and recovered, and also the vaccines provide very long-lasting protection against severe disease. Does that last forever? Well, we don't know. In order to justify an annual vaccine, you actually would need to have much better data. With the flu, we have a change in the variant that's dominant every season, and we anticipate that, and you have a different formulation of the vaccine every season. So far, the vaccine for COVID has been the same vaccine, the same target. It's basically targeted against the original variant that came out of Wuhan in March of 2020. Right now, I think it's premature to say one way or the other on that.
That's well said. All right. Michelle in Wilmington, North Carolina. Thanks for waiting. Good afternoon.
Hi. How are you?
We're great. Go right ahead, Michelle. Thanks.
Okay. Yes. I'm asking because my grandmother, she's 90 years old, and I have a friend who has contracted COVID, and she wants to visit, but I'm hesitant because she was not as diligent about mask wearing and things as I have been. And unfortunately, in my inner circle, I know 27 families who had a death. Wow. So I got so tired of going to funerals. So with that being said, with my personal contact with it, and I also work in healthcare, and I won't say where I'm in the hospital, but I won't say anything more about that. But what I will say is that I do have a concern because my grandmother is very healthy, and I don't want to ostracize my friend, but I also know that she's not as cautious and careful, and my grandmother is healthy as a horse, but I don't want to subject her to someone who she didn't get the vaccine until after she got COVID, and she and her husband had COVID. And like I said, I'm concerned.
A couple questions. So one is your grandmother, is she vaccinated?
No, because they basically said to her, because she could die by taking it because she almost died with the first thing. Her system does not allow for her to take that. Her doctor had said that. He said, they don't feel comfortable giving it to her.
Michelle, your grandmother had COVID and recovered, though, right?
No, she never had COVID. Okay. She's not had anything.
Okay.
Is your friend active? Oh, I'm sorry, Michelle. Is your friend, does she currently have COVID, or has she had COVID and recovered from it?
She had COVID like maybe about 4 weeks ago, but I'm hearing her symptoms, and I know about how that works. And so what I'm hearing from her are residual effects of it, and the residual effects of the tiredness, the malaise. I mean, I'm hearing, the cough. She still has some residual effects, but she said she recovered.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's unlikely that she's infectious. If you're worried, you can maybe have her take an antigen test before she visits. your grandma, and then if she just if it's negative, then it's, I think, perfectly safe for her to visit. I think it's likely already perfectly safe for her to visit. She's had COVID and is 4 weeks after the initial symptoms. It's very unlikely that she's infectious and probably doesn't pose any threat to your grandma whatsoever.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Michelle, thank you. And my apologies to everybody that holds. I have a few moments left. And doctor, I do want to ask you about Anthony Fauci and his comparison of the authors of the Great Barrington Declaration to AIDS deniers. And, of course, you were one of those great authors. But fill me in on what Anthony Fauci said and the case he's making and how you respond.
Yeah, so we wrote the Great Barrington Declaration. Me, Martin Kulldorff, who was at Harvard University, and Sunetra Gupta, she was at Oxford University, a fantastic epidemiologist, wrote this document called the Great Barrington Declaration in October of 2020, where we called for focused protection of the vulnerable because COVID poses such a great risk to older people. We wrote it because we knew it posed a risk to older people. Tony Fauci, the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, he wrote an email a few days after we wrote our document because it had gotten so much attention, saying that we are denying COVID. It was as if he was called it like as if we were denying HIV. There was some phenomenon, and we wrote it because we wanted to take COVID seriously. It's a real threat to older people. And so it shocked me to see this email, which was revealed based on the Freedom of Information Act request just a few days ago. It's a gross mischaracterization. Instead of dealing with the fact that there were prominent scientists who disagreed with his strategy, he mischaracterized it in order to create an illusion of consensus in favor of his favorite strategy, lockdowns. It was a gross abuse of his position as a prominent public health figure.
Well, I am glad at least you had the platform here to bring some light to your side of the argument. Of course, Fauci and his agency have not responded. I know to request a comment on that. But, Doctor, thank you. Thank you for your time, for the clarity, for the work that you do. It's always a delight to have you. I always appreciate our time together.
Thank you, Drew. Always fun to talk with you.
Thank you. That's Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. And I have to leave it right there. I just want to give the last moment to Pope Francis, if I could, this afternoon. Tomorrow is a historic and significant day. And I just really want to invite you to do what he has asked everybody to do. Go to church and pray. All right? Pray for peace. Ask the intercession of the Mother of God. He will be at 12:30 Central, 6:30 Rome time. And his papal envoy will be in Portugal. He'll be carrying out the consecration, an act of consecration of Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. You can be part of that. We'll be spiritually united. Go to church. Find one, okay? Go before the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament. Gather with your family if you can. Pray the rosary. Tomorrow is a great solemnity. It's the Feast of the Annunciation. And on that day, graces flow. At 11 o'clock, about an hour and a half before the actual consecration takes place, I'll be on the air anchoring along with Father Rocky, live coverage of this day, a day in which, as I said, grace will flow and the world will change. I'm convinced of it. Right now, we're reaching this apogee. It's been 1 month since Vladimir Putin and Russian forces invaded Ukraine. Nobody ever expected it to go this long. Of course, world leaders are meeting in Belgium right now. What's going to come out of that today? The president says they're going to levy even greater sanctions on the oligarchs and on Russia. How far can Vladimir Putin be pushed, and where will this go? That's the big question. So the timing, when they announced this 10 days ago, I thought, oh, my gosh, anything can happen in 10 days. Seems that heaven has a plan. So things are coming to a head right now, and that head will be met by the powerful and tender and loving intercession of the Mother of God. We'll be here for you tomorrow. Join us for that. I'll give you some post-consecration analysis during the broadcast as well. I'll be praying. I invite you to do the same thing and tell others. Again, Relevant Radio on our app, on the website, on the station you're listening to, beginning 11 a.m. Central, live coverage of Pope Francis as he celebrates a penance service. And then we'll consecrate the world. Have a blessed day, everyone.